The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody. It's Stephen Schleicher. I'm asking for your help for something very important for our good friend, Rodrigo Lopez. Rodrigo has written a book. Rodrigo, you've written a book.
I did. I wrote a book, man.
It's called The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. What is Tale of Tallest Rabbit about? Is it about rabbits, right?
Partially about rabbits, yes. The Tale of Tallest Rabbit is actually the story of a young girl named Monique who finds herself surrounded by talking rabbits. And because of the way she wears her hair and because rabbits are not very smart, they just assume she's a rabbit.
So this is total fantasy world, right?
It is.
It's all one story?
It's one overarching story and has a lot of smaller short stories as kind of we learn what this world is about. And actually, basically storytelling saves the day more than once.
Ooh, awesome. So this is a book for anybody, or is this for like older adults, or is this for young kids, or...
This is a book, as far as reading level, I would say 8 and up, but This is a book that if you read it to a younger child, I think they would greatly enjoy. Also, I think, you know, I've shown this book to a lot of people, and most of them are people who are 20 years old and up. Most of the people that have read any of the book, and they all seem to really like it. I think there's a lot here for adults, you know, as far as, you know, structure and kind of a few references and things like that.
Okay, so here's where we need our listeners' help. This book, The Tale of Tallest Rabbit by Rodrigo Lopez, comes out on January 12th, 2016. Now, that may be in a couple of weeks or it may be tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this release. But what we want you to do is we want you to head to Amazon.com on January 12th and order The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. Here's why we want you to do it on January 12th. A million of you all go in on January 12th and you buy this book. What will happen is Rodrigo's book will skyrocket in the selling list. And the higher it gets up on that list, the more people will see that, the more people will buy the book, and that will encourage Rodrigo to write even more books. Is that right, Rodrigo?
That is correct.
Look, if you have enjoyed Rodrigo's storytelling in Top 5, if you've enjoyed his stories in Critical Hit, if you've just enjoyed his general stories overall, I think you will enjoy The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. It looks like a lot of fun, and we want you to help out by buying this book on January 12th, 2016 at Amazon.com. You can get it in two formats, right, Rodrigo?
That's right. You can get a physical copy for about $13, and you can get just get the PDF or the Kindle version for about $5. Also, I'm pretty sure it's going to be available at least in Europe, but I have to like check some toggles and stuff to see if it'll be available in other regions as well.
Worldwide. Come on, everybody. Let's help out Rodrigo. Go buy The Tale of Tallest Rabbit. It's coming out on January 12, 2016. Head over to Amazon on that day. Mark your calendars now. Buy the book. Make Rodrigo even more famous than he is. Let's encourage him to write some more books. Let's game the system a little bit over at Amazon. We've learned this from our good friends Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young. With your help, we can do it. And we can see The Tale of Tallest Rabbit up there in the top 10 list, hopefully. Sounds good. Come on, listeners, help us out. Thank you so much for your time. Rodrigo, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, pick it up, read it, enjoy it, rate it. And definitely, if you like it, Fearsome Critter on Twitter or Magic Turtle on Tumblr. Let me know what you think.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck, Rodrigo. Let's send this book to number one.
This episode is brought to you by Major Spoilers VIP members.
VIP stands for Very Important People. and their small monthly contributions ensure that this podcast remains free for all of you.
If you would like to become a bronze, silver, or gold VIP member, go to members.majorspoilers.com for more information.
I sure do thank you for your support. Now, here's your show.
What do they call those things again?
Books?
Yes, that's what they call them. Books. This week on Dueling Review, we review Rocketeer at War, number one of four, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Dave Bullock from IDW Publishing. Europe, 1942. The world is at war as the Allies battle against the Axis. Able-bodied men everywhere enlist in the war effort, including Cliff Secord, also known as the Rocketeer. Cliff has been thrust full throttle into the heat of battle, and with or without his jetpack, he will depend on his wits and daring if he is to survive.
Welcome once again to Dueling Review. I'm Stephen Schleicher, and joining me is Matthew Peterson.
Hello.
Oh, man, Rocketeer at War.
Pew, pew, pew.
There is something about this book. I don't know what it is, but I felt like I read this story once before.
It does have a familiar aspect, doesn't it?
I don't know why. It's just the minute we got to the Cliff Secord is dead, and it's not Cliff Secord underneath the helmet.
The Rocketeer is dead.
Yeah. The Rocketeer is dead. Yeah, so the story starts off with the Rocketeer flying around and Howard Hughes and the military checking him out. And then the jetpack catches fire and he blows up and crashes and dies. And we find out it's not Cliff Secord underneath the helmet.
Interestingly, that Howard Hughes bit makes it a sequel to the movie.
It makes it weird, I guess. I don't know how I feel about the Howard Hughes bit. Yeah, everybody else uses Doc Savage.
Kept the Doc Savage thing. So this is clearly in the movie continuity. Except not, because they call her Betty instead of Jenny.
Yes.
I wonder if it's just,
or it could just be, hey, let's add in the Rocketeer, or let's add in Howard Hughes into this story. I mean, it could be, but yeah, Doc said, I mean, Hughes is not one. I mean, Hughes is, as we find out in the story, that, Cliff Secord, the day the war started for America, he enlisted and he turned over the rocket pack to the United States so that they could develop the rocket pack for their own and have their own army of flying rocket men. So to have Howard Hughes step in, that doesn't seem too far out of the ordinary at this bit.
OK, I can buy that.
Yeah. But there's something else weird going on with this book, because it starts out with the USAF base in England, March 1942, and the dead Rocketeer pilot is Corporal Holloway, right?
Right.
Then we jump a few months later to November of 1942, where we see Cliff in the trenches, getting bombed at by some Nazis, and he is saved by a female pilot called Foxy Roxy, flying her. Her USAF, it's USAF, right? Isn't that, I think that's what she's flying.
No, she's British.
Yeah, Royal Air Force, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's an RAF ship, so she's probably flying a Spitfire.
Yeah. The plane goes down, he saves her, and so we're in North Africa, and then we're in Tunisia, same general area, right? North Africa. But I thought that there was some weird other time jump that happened in here. That seemed to move it around a little bit. Maybe I was just confused by some dates. But while he's working at this airbase, a Nazi spy tries to steal a secret component from one of the planes. He chases him down. Yes. And the guy has a flying fox type costume, or one of those glider costumes that people wear when they're base jumping, that they spread out and it turns into an airfoil and they fly, whatever those are called.
I don't know those exist.
That's one of them extreme sport things.
Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Do they break the laws of physics? Because he certainly does.
You need to go, and if you haven't seen these guys fly like through mountains and stuff, go online and look in YouTube and look like they do it all from the GoPro. So if maybe if you go to the GoPro site, I mean, there are guys that are threading trees wearing these things. I mean, they're flying so fast and falling so fast that these trees, looks like there's barely enough room for them to fit, and they just go whoosh. It's pretty cool to see it. If you have not seen it, go check it out. But after he saves them, we get flash forward across the Mediterranean to Portugal.
Portugal,
where there's a secret Nazi base where they've developed some kind of weapon with the Japanese.
In Portugal?
That's what it says. Portugal, secret Nazi base.
That seems odd.
They have some kind of slag melting machine.
Some sort of death ray.
Death ray of utmost scariness.
A death ray 2000, if you will.
Maybe.
And that guy is wearing cufflinks that are swastikas.
Yes, that's how you know he's a bad guy.
I don't know if that's actually a thing.
It might have been.
I don't know.
Let's say
I want to find out.
I don't know. Look because up you that secret episode, Nazi cufflinks.
That episode of Captain America where Rob Liefeld had all of the Nazis with little swastikas on their shirts like an Izod. The Izod Nazis.
Yeah, yeah, no, I would imagine that that stuff's all real.
Yeah.
And then we meet Cliff, who gets called into his boss's base saying, hey, you just stopped a Nazi and we need the Rocketeer because no one else knows how to fly this, see?
And then, now you're the Rocketeer, see?
And then he gets introduced to a new jetpack, and then we get a side story of what's her face?
Betty
/ Jenny enlisting to join the Royal Air Force or enlisting to join the reserves. What is it called? The Women's Auxiliary Corps.
Yeah. The WACs.
Yeah. And then we get Cliff putting back on his rocket pack and flying away.
Yeah. That was really weird because I thought the book ended.
Yeah, so did I. I was like, well, here's an ending. And it's like, well, here's a poster. And now here's some more story.
And then here's a short page of Betty. And then there's Cliff putting on his suit again. And it felt like, you know, more of a tease for the next issue. But I don't know, man. I had some issues with just the basic plotting.
Okay, what's the problem breakdown with the story? I don't know. Yeah, it seemed, I don't know. Like I said, it felt like it was weird jumping.
Yes, it's very, very
stuff.
Choppy.
Yeah.
And I understand what they're doing, and I feel like there are a lot of ways that you have to work to try and get in the exposition that you need. So starting with this thing, and oh no, the Rocketeer's dead. That was good. I like that. That felt
that
like
was a
know,
good
a nice,
intro. Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Cliff, but then we're like three pages in before they identify Cliff, and we get a lot of info dumps. We get an info dump when we're seeing the Rocketeer flying. We get an info dump when Cliff's in the field. It just seems like there's a lot of points where the story is very fragmented.
I think they have to do so much info dump for this first issue because it is only a 4-issue miniseries.
Right. Cliff saves the pilot, which is cool. And then Cliff is back in his base. And there's 2 pages of that. And there's a lot of really short stuff, which is kind of like talking to a guy who speaks really staccato like James D. Kirk. And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It is just sometimes a little distracting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they're giving us these really quick vignettes. And the other reason why it feels like a weird breakup point where the breakup is because we are reading an electronic copy sent to us by IDW Publishing.
True. Very true.
And right where it felt like the issue was ending and then it picked up for another couple pages is actually the middle of the book that has this double page poster. So if you took the poster out, they don't want you to lose any pages of the story. So they've got, you know, a blank area that says the Rocketeer at War bonus poster. And then you've got a back page to that. So if you took it out, it would go right from one to the other. And then the rest of the book is a little prose story of the Rocketeer.
Okay.
That makes up the second half of that book, along with advertisements and everything. So I think that's why, I mean, so we're really getting, this is what, 48 pages of content.
Right.
So we're really getting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So we're getting 22 pages of actual Rocketeer story.
Which is your average $3.99 book. So,
yeah. So, I mean, it's not like we're missing out anything. It just, I think for me, it's the just jumping around in the dates and locations so quickly is a little off-putting. But I think that, you know, for the most part, I wasn't too disturbed by the info dump because now Cliff needs to go on a mission to stop these Nazis, these ratsy Nazis.
I think it's Nazi ratsies.
Oh, is that what they are?
Yeah. Well, when it
They're
comes
bad.
To
That's
Mark
all I
Guggenheim,
know.
I always have my reservations with Mark Guggenheim because he's done some things that are really awesome that I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And then he's done stories that are just inexplicable to me. He's the guy who wrote the story where Wolverine was completely vaporized and then rebuilt himself from a single cell in three panels.
Oh, no, that was Lobo.
No, that was Mark Guggenheim on Wolverine right after Civil War because he was tracking down Nitro. And it's one of those moments where it's such a fundamental misunderstanding that I have my worries going in when I get to the story. I think Cliff is handled very well.
Yeah.
I think Cliff is very solid in this issue. And I think part of that is just the strength of the character that we've been given. Mm-hmm. But there's also some points where I get to a point where the dialogue feels like it's a little bit too modern to me. And that's always going to be an issue with a period piece. But I feel like, what was the one that we just did, The Rocketeer?
Well, see,
like
that's why I thought that it was, I forget what that one was called. But I thought it was also him going to war, which is why when I started reading this, I was like, a lot of this feels so familiar from what we've seen before.
Maybe we saw part of that in the Spirit Rocketeer crossover.
Maybe that's what it was.
It was set later in the war, I want to say. But I think that's because the Rocketeer's native time period from the original comics takes place a little earlier than the Spirit. So.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I don't know. There was Rocketeer Adventures, which is where I thought that this book, where I'd seen this come up.
Could be.
Let's see. I was trying to look here really quick in that series about what they were going to have. I know they had Kyle Baker, J. Scott Campbell. It doesn't say anything about any of the stories in that first issue, but it just, I don't know. There's something that felt very familiar about this, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Unless, of course, you just plunk down $3.99 or $4.99 or whatever this book is, and you open it up and it's like, didn't I just buy this book like a couple of months ago?
Well, there's so little Rocketeer material out there.
Right.
And so much of it has tread that same ground, partially out of respect for the fact that the creator passed, but partially because we've seen multiple adaptations of that first three-story arc where, you know, Cliff finds the pack and flies around and either Doc Savage or Howard Hughes comes after him. And yeah, there's several different versions of that story. And it's a little bit hard with what they've done in the past and some of the issues we've read. It's hard maybe to tread that new ground. So yeah. You got to give him credit for going somewhere natural since you figure 1939, 1940, right before the war. I really do want to, and I probably should have before the show, want to do the math on if we entered the war in December of 1941, would America have already been working this hard on the Rocketeer stuff by the spring of 42? I don't know. It just seems
I mean, we were already working on the atomic bomb before we entered the war.
Well, sure.
So there's nothing that says that in those short months that it's like, hey, here's this secret flying pack that they wouldn't commit a lot of resources to, developing that further.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So overall, I thought the story was okay. What did you think of the art?
I kind of like the art. It reminded me of Darwin Cook, a little bit of Jay Bone.
Yeah, a lot of Darwin Cook is how I felt about it in there, which, again, not a bad thing. There's some weird shading stuff that goes on in places where it doesn't look like it's ink. It looks more like it's a charcoal or a pastel color using in the shading, especially when he's rescuing the girl from the pilot from the plane.
I actually did like that. And
did you?
Yeah, I thought that was kind of neat. I also felt like, I mean, yes, we're looking at a world where the main character is basically dating a very pneumatic version of Betty Page. Mm-hmm. But I felt like
even the picture that she sends him is a Betty Page pinup pose.
I felt like Roxy's general body shape and design was very, very comic book sexualized. You know?
Sure.
Her face is the same width as her waist. And again, that's a minor detail when you come right down to it, but it's something that does stick with me. I don't know. I like Rocketeer to be as photorealistic as possible because that's what you get from Dave Stevens when he created the Rocketeer. And I feel like they held that end up I mean, it's solid work. It's definitely interesting work. It's not my favorite Rocketeer, but it's also really strong line work. There isn't ever anything where you're very confused about what's going on. You don't ever look at it and go, oh, the helmet looks wrong, or that doesn't look like this, or she doesn't look like Betty Page.
Well, you've got a whole different redesigned rocket pack now going on, too, which is going to be weird to see.
Is it? I thought that was a variation on the comic book version.
No, that is that's a totally different redesigned rocket pack. It's a single engine in this one, and it's always been a double exhaust on the back in
not
previous
in the
ones.
Comics.
Not yeah, that's comics. This is a re- I think this is a redesign of what we've seen before.
Not strongly. The original one that Dave Stevens did looked kind of rockety like this. It only had the one thing.
All right. Well, I know that. I don't know. It looks a little bit more round to me.
I would agree with that, but I would probably I chalked that up to the art.
Okay. Overall for me, this book it's a solid book. It's a good book. I think Rocketeer fans will really like this book. Mm-hmm. And I think that we just have some minor quibbles because, like you said, there are so few Rocketeer books out there. I mean, the only ones we've had are the original Dave Stevens stuff and then the four volumes or so or whatever that IDW has published.
Right.
And so I don't know. It's interesting. It is. I liked it. I mean,
I liked it. And I feel like as a first issue, it's a solid individual story. I feel like as a first issue, it has a lot to overcome. And maybe being a first issue kind of held it down just a little bit because there were several points where it was, here's a ton of information you're going to need going forward.
Right.
But, you know, that's sometimes the nature of the beast when it comes to storytelling in a first issue. It can be problematic and it can be difficult, but it's not something that sinks the issue for sure.
I wonder if IDW has tapped into a perfect when we're doing a Rocketeer book or when we're doing a lot of these series, not the ongoings like Star Trek or My Little Pony and stuff, but they've tapped into this. Hey, for the Rocketeer, we know we can sell gangbusters on one and then it'll drop off to the point where by the end of issue four, that's where we need to be at. And that kind of stems out of our discussion that we had this week on the Major Spoilers podcast, that it seems like four is the magic number for the Rocketeer. And then we take a break for a while, 3 to 6 months, 8 months, whatever it is. And then we come out with another 4-issue series. And then we take another break and then we come back with another 4-issue series. Cause it seems like as I'm going back through the archives over at IDW, everything is a 4-issue series.
Yeah, I think that is the case. I can't think of any 6 issues or more Rocketeers.
Nope, I'm looking at right here. They're all 3 of 4, 4 of 4, 1 of 4. So, yeah.
And I think that works.
I think it does. But
when you're in that retro vein, sometimes it is hard to do the monthly grind. And I think that I'd rather have them give us solid 4 issues of series with a break in between.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that Image model where you do an arc and then you take a break, you get up to speed, and then the next arc comes out, like we see on Saga and Sex Criminals in those books.
This is only, let's see. Oh, so there's Jet Powered Adventures. That's the one that I don't know. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. This is the seventh series from IDW Publishing of the Rocketeer. So we've had Rocketeer Hollywood Horror, Rocketeer Spirit Pulp Friction, Rocketeer Adventures Volume 1, Rocketeer Adventures Volume 2. Let's see. Cargo of Doom.
Doom, 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 Doom.
Then Jet Powered Adventures and now Rocketeer at War. And that is not including the complete Rocketeer Dave Stevens stuff.
Doom, Doom.
So,
doom.
Yeah, with so little out there, I think it's worth picking up this week. I say go pick it up. It's you can never have too much Rocketeer.
I don't know if that's the case.
No. You can never have too much Rocketeer. And when you've got a good story.
I think that animated sequence in the middle of the Disney movie proves that there is such a thing as too much Rocketeer.
Nope. Never. Disney movie was great. So I say go pick up the book this week. I'm giving it a thumbs up.
I agree. And I think that any reservations that we have are less a question of, is it a good book? Is it a quality book? And more a question of, is it the Rocketeer that I would write? Were I writing the Rocketeer? Because, well, I have opinions about the Rocketeer.
But see, here's the thing. This is the Rocketeer in a way that we've not really seen him before, right? Mm-hmm. We are seeing Cliff not as the Rocketeer in this first book. We are seeing a story of Cliff Secord soldier, not Cliff Secord mask Pulp Fiction hero.
The non-Kateer, if you will.
And I think that really changes up. I mean, that this is really a different Rocketeer story, because usually it's like, oh, there's a fire at the old mill and the Rocketeer has to go and save Betty, who was over there doing a photo shoot or something. And that was a thing, right? I mean, not necessarily the fire at the old mill, but right. I mean, it's all basically local Hollywood 1930s stuff. Now we're seeing stuff of, we're getting into the war and we're getting close to the beginning of the nuclear age. And so they're going to be pushing up against that mass crime fighter hero of the golden era. They're going to be pushing right up against the nuclear age. And it'll be interesting to see if they go past the 1940s and into the 50s. And how does the Rocketeer cope, and how does he live, and how does he live in a world and react in a world where a rocket power is still cool, but come on, we're going to the moon kind of stuff.
Right.
And Nazis are gone, and those have always been the big foil for the Rocketeer. So it'll be interesting to see if they go beyond that, or if they say, hey, this is a story that's told during World War II and the Rocketeer's involvement in World War II. Now let's go back to 1938 and bring Doc Savage back into this.
Spring 1937.
Yes. Let us take a look. So bottom line for you, go check it out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let us take a look at what is to come in the coming weeks. Next week, the last comic book day of 2015.
Dun, dun, dun. Can you not depress me?
What? It's so exciting. We made it through another year and we've got 2016 to look forward to. Don't think of this as the end, Matthew. Think of it as the beginning of the 2016 comic book season.
I just barely got my check squared away.
Next week from Dark Horse Comics, again, being the 30th, first of all, we don't have a complete list from previews as of this recording. And number two, it is a holiday week. So I'm guessing, and it's not even a fifth week, but it is a holiday week.
I think it is a fifth week.
Is it a fifth week? One, two, three, four. Yeah, it is a fifth week. So
fifth week holiday.
It's going to be a light load from everybody. But Dark Horse Comics
three
next week.
Three comic books and an action figure from DC.
Yes. Dark Horse Comics has Colder, Toss the Bones, number four. They also have some statues and Tomorrow's number six. Ooh, they also have Lobster Johnson. Oh, that's a glass. Never mind. I was like, Lobster Johnson, Glass Mantis, one shot. Maybe it is a book. No, that is a book. That is a book. I thought it was a shot glass.
Mantis.
The Glass Mantis, one shot. That is a book. Lobster Johnson, Glass Mantis, one shot. I think when you put glass and shot in there, for me, it automatically triggers too.
This Lobster is a piece of Johnson.
It's a shot glass. Yeah, exactly. DC Comics has Batman and Robin Eternal number 13, Batman Europa number 3.
Europa?
There's also a Batman LED sign if anybody would like to pick up one of those. It says, please inquire.
Be careful. Those are like $300.
Probably. Dr. Fate number 7, Flash 47. Infinite Crisis Fight for the Multiverse Trade Paperback Volume 2. That's a $16 book. Justice League number 47. Omega Men number 7. Superman Annual number 3. Wonder Woman 47. Then we also have IDW Publishing. They have the third printing of Back to the Future number 1. So if you missed that, you can go grab it. They also have a complete Little Orphan Annie hardcover volume 12.
Wow.
That's a $50 book if you're into that. That's a reprint of the old comic strips. Fistful of Blood number 3, G.I. Joe complete collection hardcover volume 8. Orphan Black Helsinki number 2, Ragnarok number 7. TMNT 2014 Annual Deluxe Edition Hardcover.
Hey, Steven.
Yes?
What happens when the devil falls in the lake?
I don't know.
Helsinki!
No, because that doesn't make any sense at all. No, it'd be like devil's... It would be Devil-sinky. No. It'd be like Devil-sinky, because it's the devil
Helsinki.
That fell in there.
It's the devil in the water to the Helsinki.
No, not quite. You got to work on
this. Mrs. Wiggins, can you come in here, please?
You got to work on that a little bit more, Matthew.
Yeah, it's no Coffin Hill joke.
I know, right? Stupid publisher that canceled Coffin Hill, so we can't have our funny jokes.
Or even the Coffin Hill joke.
Image Comics has Black Magic number 3, East of West number 23, Morning Glories number 49, Rat Queens 14, Rumble number 10, Savage Dragon 210. Then Marvel Comics. Oh, I know what's
in that book.
We are missing out all of the and the rest this week for next week. So we don't have Boom or Dynamite or any of those guys. Marvel Comics has the all new Wolverine number 3, Carnage number 3, Chewbacca number 5, Deadpool and Cable split second number 1.
I think that's actually pronounced Chewing Tobacco.
Oh, Chewing Tobacco number 5.
And he's got that partner, Ham Salad, you see. they fly in that Millennium Filgun.
Squadron Supreme number 10. A lot of trade paperbacks next week from Marvel.
Squadron Supreme.
X-Men Age of Apocalypse trade paperback volume 3 Omega. That's a $35 book. And that's what we have right now on our list.
Omega.
Next week on Dueling Review. Hey, why don't we take a look at Superman Annual number 3.
Superman Annual number 3, written by Gene Lunyang, art by Bill Sienkiewicz and Dan Jurgens. Man of Tomorrow, Man of Yesterday. Superman and Vandal Savage have been on a collision course for centuries. As Kal-El struggles to survive against the barbarians attacking hordes, we reveal the events that led to Vandal Savage's creation and his unexpected connection to Krypton? What? Immortals gather to put an end to the last son of Krypton so Earth may live.
Thank you so much for checking out Dueling Review. You can show your support for the show and everything we do at Major Spoilers by becoming a very important patron at members.majorspoilers.com. Your contribution allows us to keep the show going, pay for our growing costs, and give us the motivation to produce more content for you week after week. If you're currently a VIP, thank you so much. We would love to see the rest of you, though, sign up in 2016. Thank you so much for checking out Dueling Review, and we will talk with you next time when you're going to hear Matthew say...
Da, da, da!
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.